Hi, I'm Arno.
Hi, and I'm Leila.
And we're your hosts of
the podcast Small Talk
Big Firm.
Allekeke tot een stukje. We are going to give you some insights of how it's like to work in a law firm such as Liedekerke, which is a Belgian independent big firm.
So if you're a law student, an experienced lawyer, or anyone else who would like to work at a law firm in Belgium, this is a podcast for you.
Voilà, ik denk dat we rond zijn, hè?
We take our podcast very seriously, but not ourselves.
Full of surprises.
Welcome to our very first episode, Breaking the Myths on Working at a Law Firm. We're so excited to be making this podcast because it's our very first podcast.
Yes, we're really, really excited. It's the first podcast indeed from the Liedekerke Law Firm, and this one is dedicated especially to the law students.
As the title says, we're going to break some myths on working at a law firm, and I'm sure many of you have watched some TV shows or movies.
I know I did.
We all did. Many. And they all depict a certain image of law firms. And what we're going to do today is we're going to break these myths or confirm the myths that are actually true.
Yeah, that's really... It's a good idea because I think that maybe indeed many people have a certain idea or a certain image of a law firm. And, well, it's true that reality is not always the same as it is shown on TV, of course.
Movies. We'd like to add that this is totally based on our experiences at our firm. So we're not going to make generalizations about other firms.
No, I think it's very important to say this. There are differences between the law firms, and anything that is said here is really only relates to the Liedekerke law firm in Brussels.
Okay.
All right, so we can start the first statement maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to start?
It's possible to become a lawyer without a degree.
I know you are referring to a certain fiction person, I think Mike, if I'm not
it's
mistaken,
Mike. It's Mike.
Yes, who actually during the whole series almost was able to practice law without a bar certificate. Is that possible in Belgium? Is that possible in our firm? No, unfortunately, it's not possible, of course. You need to have a law degree, a master degree, to be able to, first of all, also register at the bar. So it's really not possible to practice law without a bar.
Okay, and why is it so important to register at the bar?
Well, I think it's important because, first of all, if you are really going to plead in court, well, if you want to enter the courtroom, you have to have a law card or ID, and it's logical. I mean, you cannot just plead if you don't have a degree.
Can't we make a fake card? like in the movies, a fake ID?
I never tried it. I'm sure we can, probably, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't try and tell people to do it. But there is, of course, control, and every year you have to, for example, the first year that you register, you have to give your certificate, etc., to the bar. Okay. And then, of course, every year you have to pay bar registrations, fees, etc. So you really cannot escape the law, I would say.
You can't trick the system.
You can't trick the system. And also, for example, when the law firm is pitching before clients, clients will also always ask the bar certificates of the lawyers who will work on the file, because for them, of course, it's also important to know that they are dealing with real lawyers. So, no.
Okay. False. Second statement.
Yes.
Arriving in the office at 7:45 a.m. is considered late.
Well, yes, maybe yes. No.
I hope not.
At what time do you go to the office? Come to the office?
I usually start at 8:45 or 9.
Okay, that's pretty nice. No, I think indeed it's false. There are no specific hours or timings where you have to come to the office for work. Of course, now with COVID, think that also flexible working is more and more becoming the norm. So even now, it's if people want to start, for example, at home and then come later to the office for a meeting, it is perfectly possible.
Yeah, it's so, very flexible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there is, well, we are talking about hours and about, you know, at what time people should arrive or maybe leave also the firm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being a lawyer, does it really mean that they are working long hours, or how does it?
It's kind of true.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah, usually lawyers work longer hours, and especially in some departments, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're working on international cases, you have different time zones, and maybe your client is in the United States and they have a new case that they want us to work on, and it might be 10 p.m. in here and they call you. So it usually means that you have to be flexible, and it has advantages but disadvantages as well.
Also, yeah, I think it's logical, and it's time consuming, I think, taking care of the matters, etc. And indeed, depending also on the expectations of the clients and the type of questions that they receive. So it goes hand in hand. To be a lawyer means to work long hours, but that doesn't mean, of course, that it's important for a firm to make sure that everything is put in place to make this as comfortable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, I think that flexibility and being able to, you know, when sometimes it's a little less busy, that then you can take some time off to relax and then to do other things instead of working. I think that this is very important. And then at Liedekerke, we try to encourage this also.
Yeah.
So
it's a give and take
kind
of situation.
Absolutely. Next statement, in the series Suits, for example, there is a really, really close relationship between Harvey and Mike. And Mike is actually only working, or there is sometimes a battle between Harvey and Louis because they all want to have Mike. But Mike is the associate of Harvey. Is that in reality also that one partner only works with one associate?
At Liedekerke, it's not the case. We're working in a big firm, so it's kind of impossible. There are more associates than there are partners, so basically it's impossible. And that's why our partners work with multiple associates, and sometimes even the other way around. Associates can work for multiple partners as well. But we do have smaller teams where there might be one partner working with one associate. That happens as well if it's very niche.
Mm-hmm.
But Leila, I don't know, is there actually a maximum amount of associates partner can have?
Well, the bar has set a few rules with regard to the mentorship of the associates. So normally, we should say that one partner can only have one pupil. And I'm saying partner, but people lawyers who are not partner can also be a maître de stage, as we call them. There are some rules, conditions with regard to the number of years of experience that they must have, and they must be they must have fulfilled other requests regarding, for example, the number of points. I'm not going to go into details because then the podcast will be very boring. So we try to avoid this. So, but indeed, normally, with regard to the bar, there is restriction of having three pupils, if I can say it like this. But in practice, of course, in the firm, it doesn't mean that, for example, if one partner works already with three pupils, that he will not work with another associate. So in practice, it's really different.
You can become an expert in every legal area.
So you are also referring to the same series, I think, where they actually seem to practice every matter. Of course, this is false. I mean, it's true that when once you, normally also already in the studies, you can make a decision to specialize in a certain matter during the master's studies. So in reality also, normally, certainly in big firms, when you are going to work in a big firm, you will work in a certain legal area. You will not... For example, a corporate lawyer will not be a tax lawyer, will not be a label lawyer. So, no, it's not reality. Although we must say that sometimes in smaller law firms, it happens that lawyers must be able to deal with different kinds of legal areas. Yeah. But most of the time, it's more civil rights lawyers.
Yeah.
Most of the time, but when it comes to business law, the differences are so important, and it's a different knowledge. I mean, it's a different speciality.
You really
so you really
expert.
Have to be an expert. But for example, the beautiful example in our corporate and finance department, which actually covers different legal areas in corporate and in finance. In the beginning, the junior associate or an associate starts try to do a little bit everything of everything to see if then after a while there is a preference for a specific matter.
Okay.
Then the next question. Well, again, it's the top series now, and so it's normal that we are referring to suits. But in suits, for example, people seem to only be interested in Harvard students. Is it also at Liedekerke so that we are only looking at students that come from a certain university?
Yes, we only hire from Harvard.
No,
of course, that is not true. No. We don't have a only University X hiring policy. What we do have is some kind of, I don't want to say preference, but we usually hire from Belgian universities because for most of our practice areas, the knowledge of Belgian law or files that will be handled in front of the Belgian court are very important. We do have some more international oriented practice groups, and within these groups it's less important, but overall we usually hire from Belgian universities.
Okay, well, maybe I can ask another question. Is it really so that, for example, for the bar registration in the beginning, we talked about the bar certificates. Now, is it so that if you have an international law degree, for example, not a Belgian one, is it so that can you register at the bar? If you want to practice law, you need to have normally a Belgian law degree, but if you have a European law degree, for example, you can register at a different kind of list of the bar. I mean, and what you can also do is you can do an exam in Belgium to make sure it's kind of an equivalence.
Okay.
I don't know if that's correct.
Equivalence, program test or something.
Equivalence exam. Yeah. And it's just to make sure that you do have the basic knowledge to become a lawyer. But of course, sometimes people do additional courses specifically about Belgian law so that they can also know Belgian law.
Okay.
So, next question.
At a law firm, we only wear three-piece suits and high heels.
Well, I do have high heels today, but the answer is false, of course. Well, of course, it's not of course. I think that, let's be honest, people perform in a professional environment. So I think that, and maybe the law sector, I think it's a little bit more traditional, I would say, than other. It's not that we work in an IT department.
It's a bit more formal.
But it is not, because you do have differences. There are differences between firms, of course. You have firms that really demand people to wear really formal clothing. Yeah. But at Liedekerke, for example, we do ask business casual. So, and there are people who come sometimes in their jeans, etc. It's not an issue as long as you don't have a client meeting. Okay. But of course, when you have a client meeting, well, it's normal that we expect to have it a little bit formal. But it's not, we do not all walk here with 10 inch, it's a little bit, it's a lot. But high heels and three-piece suits. No, that's not a must, I would say. I must say that I do believe that it's, you know, it's sometimes nice. Now in times of teleworking, for example, we tend to underdress, I would say, when we work. And I don't know about you, Arno, but sometimes when I'm underdressed, I mean I have, for example, just a jogging or something like this.
It's not that you're not wearing that... less. You're
just... No, yeah. No. I really don't want to. But I mean, if, for example, if I'm wearing loungewear,
for example,
I do feel like I'm not professional.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And in the beginning, it was easy to say, okay, let's wear, I can wear comfortable clothing. I don't have to wear a skirt that is constantly annoying the way I'm walking, etc. But I think that it's true that, well, the clothes do not make the person, but I do think that it gives a certain sense of, you know, showing that, okay, we are professionals and...
you get into a different state of mind.
Yeah, also. Yeah. I think so in this sense, it makes a little bit sense to be well-dressed. All right, next statement. Well, I think that this is something that many people would think. Is it actually possible to have young partners? Sometimes we have, certainly in these series, sometimes you see that the partners are already of a certain age. So are there, I would say, minima age criteria to become a partner at Liedekerk, for example?
Well, you can be young and be a partner. We have some partners at the age of, for example, late 30. I'm thinking about Wim de Dekker, Roel Francis, Freya Mareels, for example.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a bit of diversity within the partners.
Yeah, it's nice. I like it.
But there is, of course, a minimum requirement. It doesn't only depend on years of experience, but I would say that after 8 or 9 years of experience, you have a chance of becoming a partner.
You are eligible, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there is not really, it's not the criterion, really the base, it's not the primary criteria to... to name someone partner, but of course having some years of experience helps, because you need to be aware of, you know, you need to have already evolved in the profession, I think.
But then again, you have to develop other skills and competences as well,
such as well, we will
managerial skills, maybe.
We will talk about this in a few minutes, I think. So let's wait. Let's keep it a little bit exciting in this podcast. All right.
Okay. Next statement, and that's something you see in lots of TV shows and, well, suits as well. Junior associates often get giant cases involving a lot of paperwork and research in books. Do junior associates only do paperwork or research work?
It's true, of course, when someone just starts at the bar, well, you need a lot of competence. You need to develop a lot of competences. So the first things to do is basic knowledge. For a good lawyer, you have to do investigation. So it's normal that they have to do a lot of research. But I think that the question was also with regard to the paperwork. Is it so that in certain industries everything is digital and we do not have paperwork anymore? And it's funny because this morning I just had a conversation with a lawyer who was talking about the International Arbitration Department and the fact that, well, with teleworking, for example, it's sometimes not convenient because there is so much paperwork mm-hmm. and you have submissions of 800 pages that need to be printed and that need to be a file. So I think that it depends also from legal area, but it's a combination, I think, paper and we have, of course, for example, we have a physical library in our firm, but we also have a digital platform to perform researches. So it's a combination of both, I would say. But indeed, the scenes that people come, well, maybe for international arbitration might be the case, but that they come with kind of, you know, remorque, I don't know how you say this, and that they spill all the documents and that you can find the lawyers behind the desk with all these paperwork. I don't think... Well, in some cases, it's also still, some people are still used to do this.
Yeah,
and to print.
It's a bit of a habit.
It's a bit of a habit, so I think it's... But we do encourage people to print less.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to our very first podcast, Breaking the Myths, part one.
Part one, indeed. And we must say that it's a special one. I really hope... I have to say it, that in a few, you know, you hear people when they make podcasts, when it's their 100th podcast, and they say, oh my God, we would never thought that we would have 100 podcasts. I hope actually that we can say this and maybe we can look back then and say, oh my God, we are celebrating the 100th episode. So this was our very first one.
Yes,
thank
right
you for
now
listening.
It's the first one.
Yeah,
thank
but it's up to you. We need your help to make sure that we can record 100 episodes. So we hope you find it interesting enough to listen to what's coming up.
And if you want to learn more about the other myths, be sure to check out our second episode, Breaking Myths Part 2.